1-888-805-6477.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and here are some of the voices from this week's top news stories.
I don't think that there has been 1 hour that has gone by that this team hasn't been working to find out where she has been and to bring the individuals or individuals to justice.
What this current commission is doing is utilizing the ability of current marketing, social media, proper advertising, and these renovations of these stores. And I think what we will see is the Liquor Commission become more and more profitable as time goes on.
I urge voters to look carefully at the candidates, look at whether the candidates are proposing viable, robust, as I do, bold solutions to the country's big problems. And if the candidates are not proposing that stuff, I don't think they deserve your vote.
We don't do fundraisers in Las Vegas and raise, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're a grassroots organization. I like to say I'm a country music Republican, not a country club Republican.
In a statement released Wednesday afternoon, Market Basket officials say employees who have been protesting the firing of former CEO Arthur T. Demoulas can return to work without fear of penalty.
From the top, that was Assistant Attorney General Jane Young providing an update on the Abigail Hernandez kidnapping case. Joseph Malika, chairman of the New Hampshire Liquor Commission, on the record-setting pace in sales and new stepped-up efforts. Campaign trail comments by GOP senatorial candidates Jim Rubens and Bob Smith. And NHPR's Michael Brindley on Market Basket executives urging their employees to return to normal by Monday or possibly lose their jobs. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you as we cover these and other stories. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests for this week's Roundup are Kevin Landrigan, longtime political reporter for The Telegraph of Nashua. Kevin, thanks as always. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back, Laura.
Also with us, Rick Stevens, Northern New England correspondent for the Associated Press. Rick, good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
And with us, as always, Dean Spiliota, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
So, Dean, the saga continues at Market Basket with executives giving protesting employees an ultimatum. What's the latest there, Dean?
That's right. You know, we've seen these ongoing protests at Market Baskets all over the region. Customers have been staying away in very large numbers. I've seen figures of some stores losing upwards of over $1 million a day. This may be costing the company upwards of $10 million a day. It's a big hit for them. So the new management under Arthur S. Demoulas has ordered workers back to work on Monday with no penalty. And they've also started and are going to continue to start advertising to fill positions for people who quit and or who are fired. So I think initially they were going to open up the hiring to people in the company and then extend it to people from the outside. So trying to get a little leverage here from the management to get people back to work. The workers seem pretty defiant so far. But yes, it seems like it's in theory going to come to a head over the next few days. We'll see.
You had a figure there, Dean, how much money the company is losing mm-hmm. per day. What was that again?
I've read reports, different reports, but some stores, individual stores, losing as much as $1.5 million a week. So overall, you've got 70-some-odd stores, as
wow.
much as $10 million a day being lost. So that's you add that up, that's $60, $70, $80 million a week.
Wow. So Kevin Landrigan, I read this morning that the attorneys general of New Hampshire and Massachusetts are now getting involved. What's their interest?
Well, both of them issued a joint statement which essentially urged the company management in place right now to do their best to take care of the employees and try and resolve this dispute, but also with the mind towards all the vendors and suppliers of all these stores. You know, with there are 25,000 workers in the Demoulas Empire and 30 stores in New Hampshire, but we're talking about tens of thousands of vendors, small and large, who supply this business. And I think the attorneys general wanted to make it clear we're looking out for them, too, and how you treat them in resolving this whole dispute.
So, and broader economic impacts then, Kevin, like you said, the suppliers and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in some respects, the Demoulas management that's in place now really didn't have much choice other than to issue this ultimatum, and here's why. A number of offers have been made, including by Arthur T. Demoulas, to take over control of this company. And reportedly, these offers are much lower than the net value of this business. That you're talking about a company, a business that has is worth as much as $4 billion in annual revenue. And some of the offers were as low as $1.5 billion. So the existing board and management has already seen kind of the economic hemorrhaging of this corporation. So in order to stop the bleeding, they have to bring the full workforce up in place and restock these shelves. That's what's been amazing about this story. I've never seen one in my history of covering politics and economics in New Hampshire to see such an organic boycott by consumers of a business like this.
Yeah, it's not just the workers who are protesting.
No, yeah. And from the very first day, people who were loyal customers of Demoulas clearly voted with their feet. And in doing so, actually went to supermarkets where they were spending more money to get their groceries.
Yeah. Rick, what strikes you about this?
Well, it is the grassroots notion of this protest. I've never seen anything like it. And if you drive by one of these stores, you can hear the cars beeping for blocks in every direction. Kevin, you mentioned the unanticipated consequences for the suppliers and the vendors. There's other guys like the small farmers who supply their produce, and they can't put their stuff on a shelf. So they're in a real pickle because their product is going bad waiting for this thing to end.
On the other hand, there are those who have taken advantage of this situation. I don't mean that in a bad way. Other supermarkets, the parking lot at my local Hannaford's is so crowded I can't find a space. Shaw's is definitely seeing picked up activity. I see an ad in the Concord Monitor today for there's a little market in Concord, a little meat market called Quality Cash. They've got an ad today. Our CEO takes care of our customers. I've also seen Dean at the Concord Food Co-op. They've had Welcome Market Basket customers. So others are jumping in, Dean, and saying, okay, come on over here.
It has been fascinating to see the impact for other supermarkets. A number of different farmers markets around the state are reporting that they're almost completely sold out of produce early on in their weekly sales. So it is having a big impact. Kevin and Rick have both mentioned the impact on vendors, people who supply flowers, produce, all the kinds of things that have a shelf life. And Kevin mentions an important issue. I think one of the concerns is with all this sort of financial hemorrhaging, the actual value of the value of the company will decrease over time, and that affects the sale price.
Yeah. You
know, one of the things you have to remember, too, as John Dumas with the Retail Grocers Association has constantly reminded me, is this business is on the razor's edge in terms of profit margin. It's very unusual.
The grocery business.
Grocery business. It's very typical for a grocery store to have in the order of 1% profit on their sales. So you have a couple of weeks where the shelves are empty and customers are gone. It's not only very difficult to get all those customers back, but you've got to pretty quickly get that business back up to full operational capacity, or you'll continue to lose a lot of money.
Well, we'll see what happens on Monday, and it'll be a stressful weekend for those employees as they decide what to do. So you can give us a call on this story and the many others we'll be covering during our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. By the way, there's still time to get your summer car raffle tickets. 1-888-805-6477 is that number. Or go to nhpr.org and get your raffle tickets there. So, gentlemen, Governor Hassan is still working her way through all the bills that were passed by the legislature, even though the legislature closed up shop at the end of June. Rick Stevens, what are some of the biggies that got signed this week? Some of the big bills that Governor Hassan had before her. Kevin, do you want to jump in on that?
Well, certainly there was the ban on human trafficking, which is significant. We already had a ban on human trafficking. This bill actually increases the penalties for people who commit the offense up to 30 years in prison, and also significantly allows victims to actually sue people who engage in trafficking and make them victims. It also allows victims to expunge their records in the future in these cases, which is important. There was also the cell phone ban with regards to handheld use of cell phones is going to be banned while driving. You'll have to use a Bluetooth or something such as an onboard like OnStar device in order to use a cell phone while you're driving. This doesn't take effect until the beginning of 2015.
Yeah, Dean, go ahead.
Yeah, the human trafficking bill is interesting. I learned that New Hampshire had one of the lowest ranks in terms of protections for victims of human trafficking. So the law is intended to give juveniles an opportunity to not be prosecuted for being caught up in these types of illegal activities. The cell phone ban we've been talking about forever, that's finally eventually going to come into effect. I think it's, July 1st of 2015. It's going to be a big change for people. I'm eager to see sort of how well that's going to go over. You know, you get, I think it's $100, then $250, then $500 for the third fine. If you've ever traveled in other states that are hands-free, it's a very different experience. We'll see how it goes. I'm imagining, just like with speed limits, they're probably going to be a little bit of sneaking here and there on the phones. We'll see.
A little bit.
It's you know, other than kind of the glow of your phone at night in your car, you know, I think people are going to be sort of tweaking that law a little bit.
Go ahead, Rick. Jump in.
Well, there will be a bit of a breaking in period, as you know, Dean. But the state is going to go ahead and do some pretty aggressive outreach and education. There'll be billboards up and the electric highway signs. There'll be posters at the DMV, and when you go to get your license or your registration, you'll be reminded. So they are going to try and do the outreach to let people know that come July 1, 2015,
Finally going to have to learn how to use the system in my car. I think this is like the third car I've owned with built-in cell phone. I've never used the onboard system. I'm actually going to have to read the manual, I guess.
I'm thinking a lot of people like you, Dean. Go ahead, Kevin.
Parents may be the happiest about this law since it also bans cell phone use for anyone under 18 while they're driving, which was a whole lot less advertised part of this, but is going to be a very significant change.
Yeah, I saw a guy the other day texting while biking. I thought, wow, okay. Interesting. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us on this coming cell phone bill that we've been talking about. Or if you want to ask some questions about the Market Basket situation, we will talk about that as well. You can call us at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And guys, when we come back, I did want to ask you about a couple gubernatorial vetoes that happened this week. And we'll talk a little presidential politics. So all that's coming up in just a moment. But let's check in now with our summer car raffle.
Paul Partenope from Gorham, New Hampshire, was the bike winner in NHPR's 2013 Summer Car Raffle.
The reason I purchased raffle tickets is it suits my style of contributing. And I really don't expect to win, but there is always that possibility. And so, therefore, just like any gambler, there's always the one that's going to come my way. Even though the odds are better than the lottery, I realize that that what I'm doing is making a contribution to NHPR.
The odds are in your favor, buying those raffle tickets and supporting the exchange every day here on New Hampshire Public Radio. And you never know, you just might win a prize as well. I'm Brady Carlson. Good morning here with Virginia Prescott. We're in the home stretch of the 2014 Summer Car Raffle because the whole thing comes down to the wire tomorrow. So why not buy your tickets today at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
And Paul really has the spirit. He won a Trek hybrid bicycle, which we're giving away again this year, donated to us by S&W Sports. But the point was that he contributed to New Hampshire Public Radio. And of course, the grand prize is going to be a new car. How much might you pay for one? Maybe you'd budget $20,000 or $30,000. Well, we are offering you a car, possibly at $50. At least we're offering you a chance. $50 each or three for $100. That's all it takes to get your name in the hat to drive away any car from the Grapponi Auto Lot if you win. 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org. That's what Paul did. He bought a ticket. And he won.
He took that chance, and it was a chance worth taking, just as it's a chance worth taking right now for you. Just 2 minutes of your time gets you in the running for each of the prizes we'll have this weekend during the finale of the Summer Car Raffle. And, of course, you're supporting what you hear every Friday on the New Hampshire News Roundup with Laura Canoy and her panel looking at the issues that the Granite State has been looking at and where we may go next week at 1-888-888-888. 805-6477. You're supporting that effort when you buy your raffle tickets and getting a chance to win some great prizes at the same time. You can also buy your tickets on our website, nhpr.org. You'll be so glad you did.
What does your support of NHPR allow? Dialogue, conversations like you're hearing on the New Hampshire News Roundup this morning on The Exchange. If you consider that most TV and cable news outlets, they're all part of bigger media conglomerates. They're in the business to make money. They want a lot of viewers or listeners, so they have bombastic guests. They charge up the conversation. They talk about the Kardashians and things like that that you're not going to hear on the New Hampshire News Roundup. And that's because we're a nonprofit public service radio station. We are in the news business and here to serve you. So support that news service that you depend on, that you wake up to, that you listen to throughout the day. Purchase your NHPR summer car raffle ticket right now. Call us at 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org.
Buy those tickets right now and you won't miss a minute of the New Hampshire News Roundup with Laura Kanoy and The Exchange. As you heard Laura mention, she and her guests are going to be talking about some of the vetoes Governor Maggie Hassan made this week and a look at how presidential politics plays a role in New Hampshire politics in the 2014 elections. Those discussions coming up in just a moment. Help support them right now by buying a few raffle tickets at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
Take a chance and support the news, but do it quickly. It is the end. It is the final day, or we end 27 hours from now. For our summer car raffle, the grand prize, of course, $25,000 toward a new car donated in part by Grapponi Automotive Group. The second prize, a gas grill from Eastern Propane and Oil. Third prize, a bicycle and roof rack from S&W Sports in Concord. Third prize, a kayak donated by Quickwater Canoe and Kayak in Concord. You have just until Saturday at noon to put your name in the hat for this prizes. So take care of it now before time just slips away. Call us at 1-888-805-6477. Or get your tickets online at nhpr.org.
It takes just 2 minutes to ensure that your name is in the running for those four prizes. Take those 2 minutes right now. nhpr.org is a great place to buy your tickets. It's safe, secure, it's easy. You can take a look at all the prizes while you're there. And remember, it's $50 for a single ticket or three for $100. You can buy as many as you like. Visit nhpr.org right now to get your tickets in NHPR's raffle.
As Paul said, odds are better than the lottery. Somebody is going to win this brand new car, this bicycle, this gas grill, and this kayak. Why not take a chance that it be you? You have to take your chance quickly, though, so do it now. 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org. Tickets, $50 each or three for $100. Get as many chances as you'd like, and good luck to you.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 924. Good morning. New Hampshire weather, partly sunny for today with some isolated showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Highs today in the lower 80s. It'll be partly cloudy tonight with overnight lows upper 50s to mid-60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, highs in the mid-70s. Sunday, mostly cloudy, chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs mid to upper 70s. And partly sunny, a chance of showers for Monday with highs mid-70s to around 80 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank, providing complete business banking services to small to medium-sized businesses in New Hampshire. Information at centrixbank.com. And Birchill Terrace, a not-for-profit continuing care retirement community, offering independent living, assisted living, and nursing care in Manchester. Birchillterrace.com. This is NHPR.
This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy, and let's turn now to presidential politics. Here's a voice that's becoming increasingly familiar here in the Granite State.
This is somebody who understands the principles of honesty and integrity and forthrightness and responsible management.
And that's Republican New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who was in New Hampshire again, Rick Stevens, for another campaign event, the second time in about a month. Who's Chris Christie here for?
Well, he came up ostensibly for Walt Havenstein, the one of the two Republicans running for the nod to run against Maggie Hassan for governor. Christie, of course, is at the top of the short list of prospective 2016 presidential candidates in that party. And he continues to try and rebuild his image after, of course, the Bridgegate scandal. scandal down there. He gets support from Habenstein in that respect, who dealt with his own sort of scandal as a leader of a company when he went into the SAIC company in 2009 and uncovered or walked into a scandal there. The interesting thing with Christie, of course, is that as the chairman of the Republican Governors Association, his job is to get governors, get Republicans elected to the executive chamber, you know, the executive mansion. But he's not putting his muscle everywhere. For example, he was in New York last week and they asked him, well, why aren't you campaigning for New York? And he said something along the effect that the RGA isn't going to get involved in landslides or lost causes. So
wow.
Right. And apparently the New York Republican probably falls into the latter. Rob Astorino faces a very tall challenge against Andrew Cuomo.
Still, that's not very flattering.
Right. And so – but then you have to ask, well, where does he see Walt Havenstein? Clearly, he's not a landslide winner and he's not a lost cause loser. So where does Christie see that? Or is this really just a way to keep Chris Christie in New Hampshire as often as possible as he shores up his 2016 prospects?
So a little bit more, if you could, Dean Spiliotis, on this. And Rick said that that Chris Christie is considered on a short list of possible presidential candidates. What about that Bridgegate? Not hurting his political capital too much here in New Hampshire?
Hard to say. There are kind of differing opinions on whether or not it's made a big difference. You know, the polling numbers on him have dropped a bit as a result, but he's still always mentioned kind of up towards the top of the pack, if not the top individual in polling on for the Republican nomination. Rick is correct that as the head of the RGA, Christie has an opportunity to go around the country. It's not unusual for these campaign committees or gubernatorial campaign committees to kind of pick and choose their battles and where to deploy the resources. It is kind of curious that he comes to New Hampshire because Walt Havenstein, you know, he may end up being the nominee. He may have a reasonable run against Hassan, but there's sort of differing views on just how competitive that race is really going to be. It's obviously an opportunity for him to come up here, make connections, get involved in fundraising, et cetera. What's so interesting for me about Chris Christie's visits is it's a double-edged sword for Walt Havenstein because whenever Christie comes up here, he's the story. So the idea is to kind of give visibility. Chris Christie was up here for Walt Havenstein a little over a month ago. Same sort of thing. Havenstein was almost invisible in the background, and Christie is just this sort of big, commanding personality. The media mainly wants to talk presidential politics. He's supposed to be raising Walt Havenstein's visibility. Inevitably, the story ends up being Chris Christie. So, you know, maybe it helps Havenstein a bit with fundraising and some earned media, but it's a mixed blessing for him, no doubt.
Again, the phone number for you to join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Your questions and comments on some of the stories that we're following today are welcome. And here's an email from Ian in Derry, talking about our earlier Market Basket conversation, gentlemen. He says, it seems the issuing of an ultimatum from the current management of DeMoulas is only a further demonstration of the very attitude toward the company and employees that the workers are protesting against. If this latest maneuver from the owners only serves to strengthen the employees' resolve and protest and boycott, and they choose to lose their jobs rather than go back to work for anybody other than RDT, what could the ramifications be, Ian asks. He says, could Arthur S. and the rest find themselves with nothing? And what kind of an economic impact would there be if the company ceased to exist? Ian, it's a great question. Kevin Landrigan, it's a question a lot of people are asking. You know, what's the end game here?
Yeah, it is a good question. And I think the answer is we're not going to know for a while. I think even if the current management is able to transition different employees into this company, it's going to take some time for those new employees to operate with the same efficiency and productivity as the people there now. We're seeing that certainly with what's happened in the last couple of weeks, where the company brought in temporary drivers to go to the warehouse. There are reports that while the deliveries, they were making 120 deliveries a day, the trucks are only delivering as much as 15 different trips out to stores. That's one of the reasons why you're finding so little on the shelves. The people who have replaced the folks who walked off the job aren't as efficient.
Well, it's interesting. We talked earlier, Kevin, about broader repercussions, meaning suppliers, meaning farmers. We talked about other stores benefiting. I heard a story the other day that New Hampshire Liquor Commission wanted to place a store in a plaza that had a Market Basket. It's a big draw. But if there's no Market Basket, maybe they shouldn't put the liquor store there because who's going to come? So there's even more repercussions that we're not even really thinking about.
No, that's true. Absolutely.
All right. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Ian, thanks for that email. By the way, while we're covering the news of the week, I want to remind you that our summer car raffle is still on. You still have a chance to get in on that raffle. Get your tickets now at nhpr.org. Again, nhpr.org to get in on our summer car raffle. And gentlemen, returning to politics, we talked about Walt Havenstein. Obviously, he's one of the Republican candidates for governor, the other being Andrew Hemingway. Kevin Landrigan, back to you. There was a little bit of bad news for Mr. Havenstein, or a little bit of criticism, I should say, from his Republican rival, saying, hey, Walt Havenstein actually supports the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare. What's going on there?
Well, while Walt Havenstein was CEO of Science Applications International Corporation in Maryland, the company received $4 million in federal grants to actually implement the Affordable Care Act. Walt Havenstein says, as the CEO, my personal and political beliefs don't have anything to do with the strategic decisions the company will make. Certainly both the Democrats and Andrew Hemingway, Havenstein's Republican primary opponent, are making hay of this. Andrew Hemingway essentially saying, much like John Kerry, he used to be for the Affordable Care Act before he was against the Affordable Care Act now in the campaign.
Dean?
Yeah, this is an interesting story, and it's kind of a recurring theme in the battle between Havenstein and Hemingway, this idea that, you know, Andrew Hemingway has made the argument on several occasions that if you really listen to what Walt Havenstein is saying, you know, he gave that speech at Annapolis, I believe, where he quoted President Obama. We now have this issue of the $4 or $5 million for Obamacare. And so, you know, Hemingway's argument has been that, you know, Walt Havenstein is really kind of much more moderate. He's not a true conservative. You know, Havenstein's argument is as Kevin said, you know, look, my political views are separate from the decisions I make as a CEO of a company in a lot of respects. You know, there's nothing wrong with a corporate CEO trying to establish connections with both Democrats and Republicans or taking contracts that are financially important for the company. So, you know, Hemingway's made this argument on a number of occasions. I don't know what kind of traction he's getting, but every time one of these little examples pops up, it feeds into this larger narrative for Hemingway that Havenstein is not a true conservative.
Again, our number for you to join us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. A couple more political stories, gentlemen, to follow up on. Rick Stevens, last week we talked about a first congressional district Republican primary debate. This week there was a second congressional district Republican primary debate. Just remind us who's running and what some of the themes are in this race.
Sure. In the second district, current state rep Marilinda Garcia is in a primary against former state senator Gary Lambert and former state rep Jim Lawrence. The winner of that September 9 primary goes on to take on incumbent Annie Custer. It's a district that sort of leans a little to the right, but there's so many independent voters in that district, some 190,000 registered independent voters, that they're really going to be the key. So they did have a debate on Wednesday, a radio debate, and it seemed like Lambert and Garcia were taking most of the time to hit each other. And then Lawrence kind of came in and said, hey, wait a minute, these kind of attacks are really more of a distraction. There was kind of a funny moment when Lambert criticized Garcia for missing votes on the floor. And Garcia quipped back that, well, there were votes that she wished he had missed instead of the votes that he had made, including some votes about health insurance and regional cap and trade. So it seems to be no matter who wins this primary, they're going to face a tough fight against Custer, mostly right now because of the money. Lawrence would appear to be on the outside looking in there. His latest financials did not show very strong fundraising. Garcia and Lambert did slightly better. And I think there's another debate coming up in 2 weeks. Kevin may have more on that.
Yeah. So if people want to take a look at these Republican candidates in the second congressional district, that's a great overview, Rick. And I wonder if you want to add anything into that, Kevin.
No, I mean, Rick summed it up great. I think this is the most competitive and interesting primary in New Hampshire this summer. I really do, because right now you can make a case for Lambert winning this primary or Garcia winning this primary, even going away at this point. That's why you saw what you saw on Wednesday. The stakes are so high. Both of these folks, who, by the way, 85-90% of likely voters out there don't even know who they are deciding to use their first broadcast debate not to talk about themselves and what they present, what they bring to the table, but rather to attack each other, because they both understand I've got to drive up the negatives of this opponent and make him unacceptable even before people know him yet.
Yeah, although in a primary, right, Kevin, you know, usually there's agreement on the issues in general among candidates from the same party. So maybe that's how they distinguish themselves.
Yeah, and certainly when there is agreement on issues in a primary, it often gets personal in order to create that difference. And that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah, there was a theme, Dean, that I came away with from that debate. Who's the D.C. insider, right, and who isn't? We're seeing that a lot this year in other races.
Right. Gary Lambert hit Marilinda Garcia for raising a significant chunk of money from outside of the state. That's a sort of very common argument you hear between opponents in primaries and in general elections. You know, who is raising the most from small donations, which shows kind of the breadth of your support in-state versus out of state. You hear this all the time. We're hearing it in the Senate race with Jean Shaheen and Scott Brown. Scott Brown bringing in a lot of money from outside, and Shaheen as well bringing in some money from outside. So that's become increasingly common as our electoral process has become nationalized due to kind of technology, the internet, et cetera. This is an interesting race. I think, as Rick said, Jim Lawrence is a bit on the outside right now. I think he raised $5,000 and loaned himself another $25,000. Now, he got into the race kind of late. And Laura, you mentioned that, or Kevin, that they're using this opportunity to kind of hit each other. These two have been going at it for a long time. Even though it's just August now, they've been competing against each other for months. So this has kind of been building, and they are going to face a tough race against Annie Custer. She's raised in the millions. It's a tough district, but it has been a pretty spirited primary so far.
Go ahead, Rick.
Just one thing to add there, too. Custer has the advantage of incumbency, but that seat has been very unpredictable lately. I think it's gone back and forth in the last three cycles from Democrat to Republican, and going back to the early 90s. There's not a whole lot of stability, a lot of job security.
I think it's a function of the larger dynamics in the state. We're a purple state. We kind of swing back and forth.
Sure.
If 2014 turns out to be like 2010, it may be a problem for Annie Custer and Carol Shea Porter. But that second CD is typically a little bit better for Dems than the first CD, but they're both clearly ride the waves of the larger mood in the country.
Yeah, well, speaking of campaign finance, Dean, Harvard professor and campaign finance crusader Lawrence Lessig has a Mayday PAC supporting candidates who support campaign finance reform. And Mr. Lessig has said, yes, I recognize the irony of this. But he came out in support of Jim Rubens this week.
Yeah, that's right. And Jim Rubens has
for U.S. Senate, I should
for,
say.
For U.S. Senate, right. Jim Rubens obviously running against Scott Brown and Bob Smith for the Republican nomination to go against Jean Shaheen. And Jim Rubens has been campaigning tirelessly for a long time now, doing some self-funding, but also getting out there, raising some money, and also getting an interesting kind of mix of endorsements from some conservative groups, some groups focused on climate change and other sort of more moderate issues. But I got to say, for all the legwork he's put in, he still has had real difficulty breaking into that narrative that says that Scott Brown is a prohibitive favorite. And Scott Brown, is polling 20, 30 points ahead of Rubens and Smith at this point. So we'll see. It certainly doesn't hurt him. But I'm not sure it's going to make a huge change in that overall race at the moment.
More Friday New Hampshire News Roundup coming up in just a moment. Let's check in very quickly with our summer car raffle.
Odds of winning the lottery, 1 in 175 million.
In most cases, the outcome of an event is contingent on many factors, each affecting the probability of a particular outcome.
Odds of becoming president, 1 in 10 million.
In the case of winning an attractive prize, the odds are affected by the average sizes of population and the average number of prizes that have historically been given out.
Odds of winning an Olympic medal, 1 in 662,000.
But there's a different set of outcomes for our annual raffle, which dramatically affects the odds.
Odds of being a winner in the NHPR Summer Car Raffle, even.
Because even if you don't get one of the prizes this year, you're still a winner. Because of all the great programs you're helping to fund when you purchase a raffle ticket, and all of the programs you'll listen to in the coming weeks and months. Here's all you have to do.
Call 1-888-805-8255. 6477 or purchase your tickets online at nhpr.org. You are a winner every time you turn on New Hampshire Public Radio and get reliable news, information, and conversations like the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup that you're hearing on The Exchange. Help us keep The Exchange coming your way by supporting NHPR now during the finale of our summer car raffle. Again, get your tickets at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org. I'm Virginia Prescott, and Brady Carlson is here with me.
And you have a chance not only to support what you hear every day on The Exchange and on NHPR, not only a chance to have your name in the running for these great prizes, but really a chance to join the illustrious list of winners in the summer car raffle history. We've already had one winner this year. Christopher LaFond of Merrimack won last week's early bird prize, $2,000 in gas gift cards. You still have some time to get your name in to win the grand prize, $25,000 towards a new car at Gripponi Automotive Group, but you don't have a whole lot of time left because noon tomorrow is the deadline. So buy your tickets now at 1-888-805-6477. Buy your tickets online at nhpr.org, but do it right away.
Now, Christopher LaFond's odds were just as good as yours, and people do win. I actually met someone who did win a couple of years ago at a wedding. And there are people that you may know in your neighborhood or your city or town that won a New Hampshire NHPR car raffle, either gas or also a car or any of the other prizes. Getting your raffle tickets is easy. Why not do it now? Whether you want one for $50 or three for $100, it'll just take 2 minutes of your time. Your odds are as good as anyone else's, so buy as many tickets as you like. They're $50 each or three for $100. 1-888-805-6477. Or at nhpr.org.
And really, everyone is a winner who buys a ticket in the summer car raffle, even if they don't wind up driving away in that brand new car, because you're supporting what you hear on New Hampshire Public Radio. You're supporting the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup here on The Exchange, a program that tells you not just what happened in New Hampshire over the course of the past week, but why it happened and what it means. We bring that to you every Friday because of listener support. Here you are listening. Now it's time to support it through a purchase of a few raffle tickets at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
And we're getting back to The Exchange in just a moment, and that is the first stage in the News Roundup trifecta on Fridays, the New Hampshire News Roundup, and then Diane Rehm's domestic and then international News Roundup. We give it to you all. But before we begin, let's just take 2 minutes of time to ensure that NHPR's programs that you value stay on the radio. You can support the programs that you rely on, like the News Roundup, by purchasing your NHPR Summer Car Raffle tickets now. And we do mean now. Deadline is noon tomorrow. So call us now at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org before the rest of the day gets in the way.
Four great prizes: a kayak and paddle, a Trek hybrid bicycle and roof rack, a Vermont Castings gas grill, and $25,000 toward the purchase of a new car at Gripponi Automotive Group. You could win one of those four prizes, but not if your name isn't in the running before noon tomorrow. So get your tickets right now, and here's the number to call to do that. It's 1-888-805-6477. You can buy tickets at our website, nhpr.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:44. Good morning. We'll have a partly sunny day today with some isolated showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. High temperatures in the lower 80s. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows from upper 50s to mid 60s. Then mostly cloudy for tomorrow. Chance of some showers. Highs in the mid 70s. Sunday, it'll be mostly cloudy. Chance of showers and thunderstorms with highs mid to upper 70s. And on Monday, partly sunny, chance of showers with highs mid-70s to around 80 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from the New England Honda dealers, featuring the 48 MPG Civic Hybrid and low-emission Civic Natural Gas. More at HondaDealersOfNewEngland.com. And from Zikos Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, welcoming fellowship-trained hand surgeon Dr. Adam Fleet to their practice. More at sosmed.org. This is NHPR.
This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Our guests this week, Kevin Landrigan, Dean Spiliotis, and Rick Stevens. You can join us, too, with your questions and comments on the news of the week that caught your attention at 1-800-892-6477. 877. And gentlemen, let's return briefly, if we could, to the Abigail Hernandez case. We talked about this last week. Abby returned home, North Conway, after a 9-month disappearance. And wow, you always imagine the worst with these stories. And there's her mother getting the best news that any mother could want, that Abby had returned. But her return, now some more information's coming out, right, Rick Stevens? Her return prompted the arrest and arraignment of a Gorham man, Nathaniel Kibbe. What's the latest, Rick?
Yeah, of course, that was the big news this week. Kibbe was arrested on Monday and charged with kidnapping Abby. To back up quickly, Abby disappeared on October 9th. She was headed home from high school in Conway and just never made it home. No contact from her for about a month when her mom, Xenia Hernandez, received a letter that the authorities did discuss. They have not revealed the contents of that letter, but they now say that she was held by Kibbe for 9 months in ostensibly Gorham. They're searching his house. They're searching some containers on the property as well. The thing to take away here, though, is that the details are still really scarce. The prosecutors are very, very tight-lipped about this. They haven't given us a great deal of information how Kibbe may have known Hernandez, whether they knew each other, you know, the circumstances of her disappearance, where she was all those 9 months, how she got back to Conway. We may find out a little bit more. pardon me. August 12th, there's an evidentiary hearing where the prosecutors have to lay out why they think they've got enough evidence to hold Mr. Kibbe. We know a little bit about him. He's got a sort of a long criminal record, nothing that would indicate this sort of behavior, but things like assault or trespassing. I hate to characterize any crime as a minor crime, but certainly not to the level of kidnapping. Again, we may learn more in 2 weeks when they have that evidentiary hearing.
Yeah, and that whole neighborhood, right, Rick, is sort of cordoned off with yellow police tape. It's a crime scene at this point. Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
You know, what's interesting, I grew up in Berlin, and my grandmother and grandfather lived about 3/4 of a mile away from this trailer park in Gorham for about 30 years. So I'm really familiar with the neighborhood. Gorham's a very small, cohesive town. That's what's most amazing about this story to this point. And I think what law enforcement is grappling with, Gorham is an extremely cohesive small town in which everybody knows everybody's business. It's the culture there, and frankly, everybody's happy with that.
So how could this happen?
Under
people's
noses.
What
did people see? I mean, Barbara Tatro, a really good reporter up at the Berlin Daily Sun this week, recorded a neighbor that she didn't identify that gave maybe a clue that apparently there was some false wall in this container behind Kibbe's trailer home, and there was electricity inside the container. So it is conceivable that may be where he placed Abigail Hernandez for a period of time. Keep in mind, once she came back on her own volition, she had lost a lot of weight, and her mother had reported that she was extremely weak. So it's quite possible she could have been in some level of isolation for a long period of time.
Well, creepy, creepy, creepy. And she was 14 when this happened. I have a 14-year-old. My heart goes out to the family, and I think everybody in New Hampshire is waiting for more information, but also relieved that at least she's back with her mom. Welcome home this week to another woman we've been following, Miriam Ibrahim. She arrived in Manchester finally this week after her ordeal in a Sudanese prison under a death sentence for not renouncing her Christianity. Her husband, Manchester resident Daniel Wani, saying to the media, "I'm so relieved, tears streaming down his cheeks, and thank you so much." That's a good story that I just wanted to put some closing notes on. Another story that we should follow up on very briefly, and to you, Dean Spiliotis, first, a New Hampshire judge this week chimed in on New Hampshire's student ID voter law. What happened there?
Yeah, the judge basically made permanent a preliminary order from 2012 that held that this new language added to New Hampshire voter registration forms was confusing, unnecessary. Basically, this was a bill, SB 318, that had been vetoed by John Lynch in 2012, I believe. It was then overridden by a Republican legislature, and it added language to New Hampshire voter registration forms that required students or anyone who registered to vote to sign an affidavit saying they are subject to state residential laws, things like changing your driver's license, registering your car, et cetera. It was basically designed to deal with this this issue of students voting. And this has been a real problem for Republicans in particular because young voters in recent years have trended Democratic. So they don't like having large numbers of students from out of state voting in elections within the state. You know, kids come in, they keep their state driver's license, they may have their parents' car, et cetera. So this is sort of an opportunity to kind of clamp down a little bit on this voting. The New Hampshire chapter of the ACLU had sued on the behalf of several individuals. Again, 2012, there's a preliminary order that said that this language was problematic, and now this judge has made it permanent. So it should give students an additional opportunity to vote. You know, our residency and domicile laws for voting have always been a bit confusing. This is an attempt to clarify what's been an ongoing issue.
And this is a part of a national narrative, right, Dean, that, you know, who can vote, who can't,
right,
and so forth.
Right. That's right. You know, we've had a lot of discussion about voter ID in recent years, about sort of ballot access laws, all those kinds of issues that have kind of played out between Republicans and Democrats. Democrats have claimed that Republicans have tried to kind of limit voting opportunities for Democratic constituents, whether they're minorities or students or some other group, and Republicans have fought back that they just simply want a system that accurately reflects where people are legally allowed to vote.
Yeah, and earlier in the broadcast, Kevin, we talked about bills that Governor Hassan signed this week. She's still working her way through this mound of bills that the legislature passed this past session. She also gave out some vetoes, though, this week. What did she do?
She did. Kind of interesting, mainly because some of the vetoes really upset Democratic legislative leaders.
Oh, really?
She vetoed a bill regarding the bullying of state workers. A number of states have looked at this issue. The State Employees Association has kind of made this a priority for the last 3 years, has been pursuing this kind of policy. She essentially said it would lead to frivolous lawsuits, even more litigation than now exists, and it would make it hard for managers to manage. She also vetoed legislation dealing with juvenile justice reform, in which the legislature wanted to create a new position, director of juvenile services, and put that person in charge of the entire panoply of services that are provided to troubled juveniles. And Governor Hassan disagreed with that. She felt they were essentially creating a new administrator who primarily was in charge of the Sununu Center, where youths are incarcerated. And that person should not be in charge of the entire system. You only have about 60 people at the Sununu Center, but there are 1,400 kids across the state that receive all kinds of services, from treatment of all sorts. And so she opposed that and vetoed it. She did order Health and Human Services Commissioner to essentially do a comprehensive review of juvenile services, hire a consultant who looks at our system and see whether it can be reorganized differently.
Yeah. So, you know, on the face of it, it looks kind of, you know, picky and bureaucratic. But there's some fundamental questions here, Kevin. You know, how do we view young people who commit crimes?
Sure, absolutely. And it becomes particularly important, as you know, because we just passed a law that raises the age of adulthood.
That's
in terms
right.
of violent crime. So a lot of 17-year-olds, not a ton, but a number of 17-year-olds who've committed serious violent crimes who were going to state prison now will go into the state juvenile justice system. Probably
right.
the Sununu Center.
Well, we'll have to look at that maybe in more detail down the road because that's a big issue. We often like to end the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup with a fun story that caught our attention. And, Rick, I'm going to turn to you. A New Hampshire biology professor found the Granite State's first woolly mammoth evidence. I love this story. What did he find?
It's a great story. Fred Prince is a biology professor at Plymouth State. Finding the mammoth tooth is rare enough. I don't believe they've been found very often in New England, certainly in some other parts of the Northeast. But this is an animal that died out 10,000 years ago. So it's a rare find. But I thought the more interesting part was the way he found it. 10 years ago, Fred Prince is fishing in Campton, finds an interesting looking rock, turns it over in his hands, oh, very nice, tosses it away.
Yeah.
It's years later that he buys a molar from the Netherlands and he says, hey, wait a minute, this looks like what I found 10 years ago. I think I threw out a mammoth tooth.
He's kicking himself.
Yeah, he's kicking himself. So he goes back a couple of miles away from his original fishing hole, bam, sure enough, he finds another mammoth tooth. And this one's confirmed. It's a fun story. And it's also got some historical and scientific significance as well, because, as I said, they're very rare in New England.
All right. Well, it's a fun story. And congratulations to him, by the way. It's a big deal. Yeah. It's a big deal. Gentlemen, this has been great. I really appreciate you joining us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Laura.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's check in now with our summer car raffle.
You have a chance to support The Exchange, the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, all of what you hear on NHPR, and get a chance to win some great prizes in NHPR's Summer Car Raffle. But your chance to get in is only for a little bit longer. Call 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org if you'd like to buy your tickets on the web. I'm Brady Carlson here with Virginia Prescott.
And your chances are much better than finding the remains of a woolly mammoth in New Hampshire, so why not do it? We're actually going to be raffling off a car, but we're leaving it up to you, the winner, whoever that may be, as to what kind of car to drive away with. Now, that could be you when you get your raffle tickets, so consider, what would you be looking for in a car? Would you say mileage, power, or how much packing space there is, or whether it's cool looking, or it's technology, or having a certain je ne sais quoi? Maybe you need to consider that now, because you could be the winner. You'll pick a new car from Groponi Automotive's 6 dealerships, either a Ford, Honda, Hyundai, Mazda, Scion, or Toyota. But the choice can only be yours if you get your raffle tickets first, and you better get them now. The deadline is noon tomorrow. Tickets are just $50 each, or 3 for $100. Call us at 1-888-805-6477 or buy your tickets online at nhpr.org.
Exchange fans, the next time Laura goes live on the program, it'll be too late to get your summer car raffle ticket. So take just a moment right now before 10 o'clock at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org. And it really does just take a moment, about 2 minutes on the phone or on the web. We don't need a whole lot of information. You can get back to your Friday morning radio listening as well, knowing that your name is in the running for the summer car raffle.
Now coming up, the Diane Rehm picks it up from the New Hampshire News Roundtable to go to the domestic news roundtable. She always has terrific guests, great discussions, great callers that give you a sense of processing what goes on in the news in the week. But please, first, just take 2 minutes to ensure that NHPR programs that you value stay on the radio. Support the programs that you rely on, like the Friday News Roundtable. Purchase your NHPR summer car raffle tickets right now. It's a great way to support the news and take a chance on some really terrific prizes. Call us at 1-888-805-6477 or go online at nhpr.org. Take a look at some of those terrific prizes and buy your tickets there.
Those tickets, those prizes are worth taking a chance on, but waiting is not worth taking a chance on. Noon tomorrow, we'll be here before you know it. The end of the week gets very, very busy, and this is not something you want to accidentally miss out on. So if getting car raffle tickets has been on your mind, if it's on your mind right now, and I know it is because here you are listening, then pick up your phone right now and call 1-888-805-6477. Log on to nhpr.org to buy your tickets on the web. Do it right now.
Yeah, you know that summer weekends are such a precious time. We fill them up with as much as we possibly can. Well, don't miss out on the NHPR Summer Car Raffle because you've got too much to do this weekend. Take care of it now. Call us at 1-888-805-6477. It'll just take 2 minutes of your time on the phone or online at nhpr.org.
And yet the benefits will be there all year long because you're supporting what you hear on The Exchange. You're supporting what you hear on The Diane Rehm Show. You're supporting New Hampshire news stories, national and international coverage that keeps you informed at the same time that you get to win a great prize. That's what you're doing when you buy those raffle tickets at 1-888-805-6477.
You only have until noon tomorrow to put your name in the hat for the $25,000 towards a new car at Groponi Automotive Group, or a Vermont Castings gas grill, a Trek hybrid bicycle, or a kayak and paddle. The tickets are just $50 each, 3 for $100. Why not take a chance? Somebody is going to win these prizes. Why not let it be you while you're supporting New Hampshire Public Radio? 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
You can buy as many tickets as you like if you're feeling lucky, as they say. 6 for $200, 9 for $300. But do know this. this. Even if you don't end up driving away in that brand new car, you're a winner in this summer car raffle when you buy those tickets, because you're supporting the programs you enjoy here on New Hampshire Public Radio today and every day at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
Whether it's driving away in a new car or grilling something great on a Vermont Castings grill, taking a ride on a Trek bicycle or a kayak, all of those things could be yours, but only if you get your name in the hat for this drawing. 1-888-805-6477, just until noon tomorrow. You can also get tickets at nhpr.org.
The Diane Rehm Show coming up on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Geriatric Psychiatry Services at Versby Memorial Hospital in Rochester, specializing in mental and behavioral health for people 65 and older in outpatient or inpatient settings, versbyhospital.com. And Centrix Bank, see beyond with Centrix Bank, customized business banking for businesses, professionals, municipalities, and not-for-profit organizations, online at centrixbank.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The government says the July unemployment rate inched up 0.1% to 6.2%. In a separate report, 209,000 new jobs were created last month. Economist Scott Brown of Raymond James & Associates says the news is good, but could be better.
Other parts of the report suggest that we're not really taking up a lot of the slack that was generated in the job market during the downturn. You know, it's good news, bad news. We're adding jobs, but we'd still like to see much better job gains going forward.
Economist Scott Brown. A brief ceasefire between Israel and Palestinian militants has collapsed. Each side blames the other for firing. NPR's Soraya Sarhadi Nelson is in Jerusalem.
Israel is accusing Hamas of actually launching rockets into Israel, and they also accused Hamas militants of fighting troops that were still on the ground in Gaza, fighting Israeli troops. And most disturbing, perhaps, for the Israelis, is that one of their soldiers is apparently missing, and the Israeli army says he has been abducted by Hamas militants. They are searching for him frantically now.
Palestinian media also report at least 20 Palestinians have been killed in today's Israeli strikes. The UN coordinator for the Mideast peace process says two Israeli soldiers have been killed today.